Testing, yes, we're on the record.
Mr. Taylor, this is the commencement of the afternoon session on July 3rd, 2007 of your appeal of the various ARO rulings of the board. At about the time we left off, and I'm now looking for my notes of today, you indicated to the panel that Dr. Sauls, who I gather had been your personal or family physician for a number of years, had, as is the usual case, made handwritten clinical notes of his care and treatment of your personal medical needs from the time of the accident in February of 97 forward, and that you had eventually obtained hard copy of those notes from Dr. Saul's office. I think you indicated that in no event had you made any attempt to submit any of those notes either to the board or this tribunal. And that whole dialogue was in the context of your assertion that some of the deficiencies or shortcomings of which you've complained concerning the body areas that are at issue in the scope of your injuries, and in which Dr. Sauls had simply made very cursory reference to the back or back strain, were in conflict or might be better understood if we were able to look at those clinical notes. It seems to me you were indicating to the panel that the notes went beyond what his form reports and progress reports say. Is that fair?
To my recollection, yeah.
Well, the thing I'm concerned about, and we've discussed during the lunch break, is whether you now believe, or after reviewing those notes in hard copy, you can develop the view that it would be helpful for this panel to have recourse to those notes. This is something, again, where being self-represented, I would be much happier if you were able to take advice from a representative. But if the notes expand on or provide more detail or, for example, refer more emphatically to issues such as entitlement to your neck and upper back, on the one hand, possibly as well may address the issue of permanent impairment to those body parts as opposed to your lower back, then I want you to consider whether you want to provide copies of them to this panel for our consideration, because I don't want it suggested later on that having made the statement you did on the record about the existence in your possession of these notes, that we didn't have a full accounting of what Dr. Sauls recorded over the course of his treatments because they weren't here. So let me just ask, how did you come by those notes? Did you make a simple patient's request for copies?
It was a combination of two events. I did request that, and in doing that at the time, in my recollection, I believe it was 2005, it's in his letter that he's no longer my doctor because he's terminating his practice. So he's not.
His letter is a letter to you.
Yeah, he wrote me the letter with the file and said, here is a copy of your file.
And that explains why you've gone to Dr. French, I think.
Correct, yes.
Yes. But up until 05, which is a period of 8 years after your injury,
correct,
Dr. Sauls continued to be your family physician?
From before 97, past 97 to 2005, yes.
Yeah, all right. And I take it he wrote you a letter, which you could produce to the tribunal.
Yes.
Enclosing his files.
Yes.
So the question of whether you sat down and wrote them out can be avoided by having that letter as well as the material he sent to you.
Yes.
Well,
the letter was to all of his patients, specifically saying that he's closing his practice because he's gotten another job, whatever. And he just put a hand note at the bottom saying, Paul, here's the file you requested as well.
That's fine.
Yeah.
And he sent you clinical notes recording the various dates on which you sought his medical care,
mm-hmm.
from before 97 through till 05 or 04. Do we know?
Yeah, I think so.
And you've had those in your possession for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to repeat my question. Do you believe, given what you've said about your concern about different references to the different body parts and your assertion today by way of appeal that you're entitled to the upper neck, upper back and neck,
mm-hmm.
do you believe those clinical notes would assist you in that respect? And also, in our discussion, I'll be very frank, the other thing which I think is our next issue, which is permanent impairment to the upper neck, upper back and neck. You've got an L award for the lower back. Query whether that also might be supported, assisted, or advance your cause to have us see the clinical notes. It's up to you.
Yeah. I mean, in general, yes, without a question. It's just specifically like my two concerns for not providing them. One was the fact of he wasn't here to say, to attest to the validity, but you've already addressed that. That's why I didn't. And the other was, is to my recollection, they weren't detailed. Like, the board sends the functional ability form, and it's got great detail, you know what I'm saying? But when he sends in to say his limits, and he just says no heavy lifting, and he's very general, you know, tolerance limitations. So my point is his notes are generalized. So I don't know to what depth they would help, but I'm sure they would be more than what I have now.
Well, you said earlier, I think you said, by way of argument, that you're unhappy about some of his reporting and some of the things he said seemed to be rather
contradictory.
Well, and rather cursory. I mean, they were very short statements of things that he might have expanded upon in these notes. And if we had access to the notes, we would have a better understanding of what he was concerned about, or, equally important, what you were complaining about to him. Maybe. We don't know. We haven't seen them.
Right.
I'm suggesting to you as a result of our discussions about that dialogue before lunch that if you want to have the tribunal consider Dr. Saul's notes in terms which may support either initial entitlement or permanent impairment to the upper back and neck, we are prepared to have a look at them. But it's up to you, and if you are, you're going to have to take, you know, get the letter and the enclosures and have them photocopied and made available to us this week.
You mean after the hearing?
No.
Tomorrow
morning would be good.
Okay.
And if you can't arrange that, you know, there's a Kinko in this building on the street level.
Okay.
You could do it at lunchtime or, you know, whatever. I think they're open awfully early, so you can do it in the morning. What we need are four copies, three here and one for the office, of the letter and its enclosures. I don't want to slow the pace down, but if you think these materials are important or could be, you've heard me say more than once this is a fresh start. The fact the board didn't have the material may be unfortunate, but
you can't blame anybody for that.
That's past history.
Yeah.
I repeat my colleague's statement. We often find the case record or an addendum includes pages. I had a case last fall where there were 60 pages of clinical notes from one treating physician over a period of several years that were referred to quite extensively in the presentation of the appeal. So let's just leave it that you're going to decide what you want to do. This is your appeal. If you think it would be of assistance to you, we're prepared to look at them. And in fact, if you can get them in here by tomorrow at some point, my suggestion would be that we'll read them as well as we can understand. Dr. Saul's handwriting looks legible.
That's another problem. It's very hard to read.
Well, as much as we mm-hmm. can. And if we then have questions about what it says or doesn't say in respect of your claims, we may address those questions to you before you're finished. But I just don't want to have you feel at the end of the day that much but for the submission of this material, these clinical notes over a period of years, I might have been able to get something allowed that wasn't. Understood? All right, now, we were, I think...
But then that poses the question of how do I proceed with the permanent impairment issue at those...
Like, well, we can come back to it. I mean, so I think you should proceed with issue number two now.
Okay.
And if it's apparent, either by your review overnight of those notes or our look at them in due course when they're made available to the panel, that the issue of PI and the evidence you want to give or any submissions you have may be affected by those notes, we're quite prepared to revert to that material, even though you've done issue number two this afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to be as helpful and flexible as we can.
I appreciate it.
All right. So are we...
It's just, if I can say one thing, was is that you mentioned about the representative. I've had five, and I've paid out a large amount of money that I haven't gotten anywhere with them. And it was very frustrating because they don't help you. You know, you can't do anything.
Are you saying the OWA does not charge you? The OWA?
3 years was my wait with them.
You did have someone representing you at one
time? At that time, yeah. And then when I went back to say, hey, there's something wrong with this decision, there was issues, they said, you'll have to wait. And they said, I think at the time it was 2 years. And then when I called again about 2 years ago, before I took on this and I got rid of the lawyer, and they said it would be 3 years. I don't know what the wait time is now. Like, this is what I'm being told on the phone. I mean, it might be something entirely different now.
I saw kind of water under the bridge at this point because you're representing yourself. But, I mean, there are other legal aid clinics that don't charge as well that do this mm-hmm. kind of work.
Well, let's not digress on the subject of...
No, I just wanted... Like, I'm not being arrogant to say that I'm doing this on my own.
No, you touched on the subject of your discontent with the results of some of your earlier reps' work back in January, sir, and we've heard that. So let's get back to the merits of your position under issue number two in the first ARO decision of September 2001. I take it your position is that in addition to the permanent impairment award and NEL assessment for your lower back,
mm-hmm.
that you want us to grant a permanent impairment entitlement and an assessment for the mid-back, upper back, and neck.
Yes, sir.
And I take it that, well, let me ask. Are there any medical reports right up until 2007,
mm-hmm.
because we've seen Dr. Modi's more recent reports in the latest addenda, are there any other medical reports beyond those which have been canvassed at some length which you suggest or submit support PI as opposed to initial entitlement?
Well, the ones that we've discussed, which were, I'll just mention the doctor's names, was Dr. Singh in 2001. He makes specific reference to the areas that he examined and said that there was, in general, concerns.
Let me just get that. If I can, quickly.
Sorry, I don't have the reference in front of me.
Well, I had Dr. Singh in 2005. I didn't recall.
No, that was doctors. Because there's two.
There's a Dr. Silva in 01.
That's right.
But I 01 seems to me to be just two items.
Oh, sorry, it was 2005, Dr. Singh.
Yes.
Sorry.
And that's it. Addendum 3, page 65.
Right.
106, 107, right?
Oh, is this the one where I've got the different page number?
Is that right, Mr. Taylor? 106, 107, addendum 3.
Yeah, I believe so. Yes, sir.
Maybe 485 or 106 and 107?
106 and 7 is the same as page 65 and 6, which happens to be the one I looked at. And you're right, a gain of 84 and 5. It's at least three places in this addendum. Mm-hmm.
I think it's one, it's because it's sent into the board and sent into the arrow. They, you know, unfortunately it creates utter confusion.
Well,
and frustration.
And you were saying that that letter refers to
The cervical and
thoracic.
Yeah, sorry. Thoracic spine, yeah. And the lumbar spine. And provides a diagnosis of mechanical neck back pain. Goes on in more detail. But the one in 2001. That's in response.
Well, it's in the case record at page 310 is the only 01 doctor note I have.
Which, volume 1, right?
Volume 1, page 310.
That's fine.
This is Jamie D. Silva. I was never sure whether that's a male or a female.
It was a male doctor.
June the 9th, 2001, a report to Dr. Sauls.
He just mentions, like you were saying, was there anything more about the medical? And it's just that he just mentions the trigger points and the tenderness in the paraspinal muscular throughout.
I'm trying to make sure I have no... That's the very last sentence on the first page of the letter.
Yeah, on 310.
And, just looking, I don't see any concurrent dialogue at the board in the memorandum section about any questions.
No, there's the only ever reference made to his report was from the ARO.
In her decision.
Yeah. And that was it. And I mean, in my opinion, which has no, I believe she didn't, it's because he didn't put enough detail in his report.
Well, again, sir, it seems what you're saying is that the report doesn't do what you want it to do, but
well,
we can't help that.
What I want it to do. Just, yeah.
So that's Silva in 01, and let me just make a note of that. Again, Dr. Silva in that letter at 310 starts with a long paragraph after the introduction as to the February 97 work accident. And I take it, he starts, in fact, as you know, meaning Dr. Sauls, and I take it the bulk of that would have been his inquiries of you as to what happened and what you putting up with since?
I would have to assume so, yeah. I mean, I don't honestly recall the exam. All I remember is him performing the exam and explaining to me exactly what was wrong. in the examination as to why I haven't recovered and that kind of thing. Like, he was explaining the medical conditions and things like that. But I don't remember.
Well, let me put it a different way, Mr. Taylor. In the course of reviewing this letter, which you've asked us to look at, in respect of the 2001 opinion then offered to Dr. Sauls, is there any basis on which you would challenge any of the history information?
Well, what he's put here?
Yeah.
That's about right.
So just to be clear, Mr. Taylor, apart from these two letters from Dr. Singh in 2005 and Dr. Silva in 310, your claim for an impairment award and assessment for upper back and neck is also, you say, covered by or supported by all of the other medical that we've already talked about, up to and including Dr. Modi's letters of 2007?
Correct.
All right, so...
Like, aside from that, there's not much other than it, and instead of legal arguments and policy. Like, referring to the policy, what concerns me about the permanent impairment in the argument side is that it states in the policy that referral would be made 3 to 6 months for a spine injury in general terms. Permanent impairment wasn't assessed until 99, 2 years after.
Well, you got your NEL award.
Mm. But that wasn't until 99, 2000, I believe.
But the fact is, you were denied entitlement
for
the upper neck and upper
That's
back
right.
and neck. So there was no basis of entitlement on which to refer you for a NEL assessment, unless this panel were now to award an initial entitlement under issue number one.
That's right.
Correct? In issue, in a non-issue, which is your lower back,
that's right.
You got a NEL award and an assessed at 14%. Correct?
Correct.
And it, as you said, the evaluation of that issue and the agreement to grant you a NEL award occurred by coincidence, very close to the end of the period during which it was supposed to have been undertaken.
Oh, you're talking about the regional evaluation report?
Well,
in reference to, yes.
Yeah. So, but there's no contest between you and the board on the lower back now award. The assessment rating, I know you've appealed, but the initial entitlement, there's no contest.
No.
So, are we in a position to move on?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any other submissions on PI other than the fact that they flow from these medical reports if we were to grant initial entitlement?
See, that was the problem in general, was is that with the entitlement issue, that I seem to have gotten into more of a PI in testimony and dealing with argument on the first issue than really in dealing with it as the first issue, which was just specifically entitlement. So, no, there wouldn't be.
Well, you're saying, let me be clear, if the panel awards initial entitlement for the upper back and neck, it flows from that based on all of the medicals, including these two we've just talked about, that some degree of permanent impairment should also be awarded for assessment by the board.
Right, because...
We won't do that assessment. It would have to go back to the board.
Well, yeah, of course, yes.
So... Is that,
yes,
as you said, in fairness, and I don't mean to sound the least bit
no,
quarrelsome,
no.
A lot of what you put on the record to date January and today, tends to deal with both aspects of the matter of these first two issues, both entitlement and the permanency of the impairment to your upper back and neck.
That's correct. Like the only difference between with the permanent impairment, the way I see it is the length of time of the injury, like which what I was saying, 3 to 6 months for standard soft tissue or spine injury, whatever. And if the medical shows that there's areas in those areas in the upper back and neck and mid back even, that there's problems.
Where are you?
For the policy is on page 214 of, sorry, addendum 5.
Back to the same
issue. No, I just want to get the page right.
That's all I was saying was.
Which is that?
Addendum
CR?
5.
Addendum 5.
Yeah, and that's all I was saying was is for the permanent impairment, that the medical supports that policy for the permanent impairment.
Well, they comply with it.
Yes.
That's a better way to put it. All right. I'm going to take the plunge, sir, and suggest that we turn to the next or last issue in ARO decision number one, which is your objection to the award of full temporary partial disability benefits, FEL benefits, from October to December of 98 and January 99 to March 2000. And I have a note that something helpful can be referred to on page. But the decision of Mr. Riviera is at page 344 of the case record. The claims adjudicator's principal concern seems to be a lack of adequate documentation with respect to a self-directed job search, and that the monies you obtained while employed at BMG are not reflective, noting that many days of time from work were lost due to your complaints, car problems, and an illness of a brother. Is that the letter that, I take it that's the ruling that was taken by you to the ARO on this, on these two periods? Is that right?
I'm just trying to remember because unfortunately, because he made a decision and then I think when I sent in my letter to appeal, he prepared that. But,
well,
I mean, it covers the facts and everything in the file.
I'm looking at the top of page 2 of that letter, 345. And I happen to see that those are the same dates that are referred to in the hearing ready letter and in the ARO decision. So I assume this was the starting point for that part of it. I take it...
Because the issue in itself, the time frames go back all the way to December 98, December 4th. And it changes... It's evolving.
Well, in fact,
but this is the
October
last
90.
One, and this is the one that was, I would say.
All right. Let me just ask this question. From October 3rd to December 16th of 98, what was your employment status and income, if any?
I was not employed.
same true from January 13th of 1999 to the start of your LMR program in March of 2000?
No.
All right.
January 13th, I was removed from work by my doctor. There's a letter in file for that. And then there was the BMG program, which was in 99. There was confusion as to the dates worked. Page 386 shows the work.
Well, that's a job description.
Sorry, page 383. Actually, that's not very clear. Oh, it's better on page 374. Sorry. And that's the employer's recollection of working days and companies worked.
374.
Volume 1, yes. The last one is the DMG attention May 26th. Starts 99 and completed August 25th, 99. Go through this in my testimony.
Well, I just wanted to make sure.
Sure.
We know
clarify
what we're doing here.
Because there was the working, and then the issues identified. Like it says from January 13, 1999 to March 8, 2000. There's not the break of the BMG.
Sorry, you know, there's not a.
Well, I worked in between January 13, 1999, March 8, 2000. I worked for the employer. For BMG in that time, in
within
order,
that period,
yeah, from May 26, 1999 to August 25, 1999, and that's not in that statement.
So were you getting full pay for that period? So you're saying that period should be excluded because you were receiving full pay?
Well, there's missing dates. Like I'll get into it in more detail. Because initially in the Pride Pack incident, the employer was only paying, was paying considerably less. And then there was a direction by the adjudicator for the employer to pay full wage, pre-injury wage, which they then did.
What's your complaint about under this issue? I'm still trying to figure out where we are in relation to the...
Well, it would be the remainder of the 50%. See, they say full temporary benefits, but my argument is from January 13th to May 26th, my doctor had removed me from work. So there would be a difference of which benefit.
To when? May 26th, you said?
January 13th.
To
addendum 8, his note was.
May 20?
May 26th.
All right, let's do this one at a time.
Okay.
You're saying that you were entitled to more than 50% based on your medical care professional telling you not to work.
Mm-hmm.
But that's in January.
Right.
And then I lost it.
Between October 98 and December 98?
October to December, if I may.
There was no job offer.
I was waiting
until December?
Well, I talked to the employer, but they said they did not have any modified work. I was fully recovered.
Right.
So back and forth between me and the employer and WSIB. WSIB renders a decision in December 4th or 5th, I believe it was, and said, no, you're fully recovered to return to work. December 16th, I went back to work. So it's a question of waiting for, how would you call it, a suitability issue from the board, mediation in a way.
Well, the board considered you recovered.
In December 16th.
So they didn't think there was anything, you had any restrictions anymore.
The adjudicator.
Yeah.
But when you read, the medical consultant says otherwise.
Taylor, I'm afraid before we go any further, I'm going to try to find my copy of Exhibit 1, which I've now missed.
Are you here in Red River?
Yep. No, but it's got notes on it. Wait a minute. Here it is. I put it with that page of the letter of claims adjudicators. So, October to December of 98, you were off work based on.
I think it was a question of suitability of the return to work. My doctor had sent a note to the employer. I'd said to the employer to continue with the modified work program. And they refused. They said, no, you're fully recovered, the employer. So there was a disagreement over whether I was fully recovered or not, or should be in modified work.
All right, just a minute.
In memo, page 159, there's a memo from a manager, and it says that you received a letter from your employer dated December 15th, 98, confirming offers of employment.
I wouldn't say I went physically back to work December 16th. I was working on
December 16th. No, but is there a letter from your employer dated December 15th, 98? Because that's what it says, that you received a letter with offers of employment from.
I think they're talking about, I know we're getting into it a bit, but the only offer before the one of December 16th, which was XDL, was the thing they were talking about. I think it was Cooney or something, and they called me at 5 o'clock at night to go to work for 5:30 or 6 o'clock or something, and I couldn't do it, you know, for the short time frame.
There's some reference in the case record on memo 70 where the the claims adjudicator, and that's on page 135. We're talking the period between October and December of 98, correct? Page 135, October to December of 98. I think that's what you're just referring to. So I have a job that you were offered and you turned it down. I think that's, is it Figueredo? Is that who you spoke to in those days? Can you remember?
Yeah, she was my adjudicator.
Okay.
At that time frame.
I would like to look at that memo and might be able to give us.
Okay.
isn't this what we heard this morning, Mr. Taylor, that you were offered a driving job, shunting job that did not involve any loading or unloading?
No, that was something entirely different that we're talking about now.
All right, well then take a look at the second paragraph of Memo 7.
If I may, and what I was talking about this morning was it was doing the job that I was doing at Canadian Tire, but just not unloading the trailer. In the XTL position, that was shunting, which is an entirely different, it's a truck driver, but it's a different kind of physical job, per se.
All right. Did they offer you, in October, driving with Canadian Tire without loading or unloading?
Did they offer it to me?
Well, read the first two. The reason for call, read the first three paragraphs and tell me if they're wrong.
How could I ask for other work October 2nd when October 2nd my modified work program had ended? I didn't ask for modified work until December.
Yeah, I don't believe your employer was Canadian Tire at the time, right?
Canadian Tire was the employer's customer.
That's right, yeah.
Apologies if I've led you astray to believe that.
No, I didn't. Yeah.
No, I mean, we have a
good understanding.
A concurrent memo.
It's just there's a lot.
We have memos in October 98. I mean, there's a memo on page 164 which talks about October 98. The worker called.
Because even before October, I knew I wasn't going to.
They called the worker?
Yeah.
So he hasn't been working since. We did the rec modified work that the rec has suggested for 6 to 8 weeks.
Right.
And you completed that October 2nd, 98. And you haven't, it says you had not worked since that time. You're receiving chiropractic treatment, et cetera.
That's the other, yeah. And that was up to December 98.
And that you're not able to return to regular, you said you couldn't return to regular duties, you needed modified work. So during this period, it seems like you're trying to get modified work.
From the
In the meantime, the claims adjudicator decided you don't have a permanent impairment, that you could go back and do your regular work.
Yes.
And that's why you went back December 16th, 98.
Because I was told by the adjudicator,
if you don't go back, you'll be cut off benefits? Or?
Well, no, she just said you're fully recovered. She ruled in favor of the employer.
Right, and they weren't going to pay unless...
It wasn't an issue of being paid. Well, the employer, it was at the time I was working for, the employer being paid by them in October. And I just wanted the adjudicator to say, yeah, he should be in the modified work program.
Right.
And she said no.
They said that you were recovered.
Right.
Yeah.
And you should return back to regular work, which I've done about a week and a half to 2 weeks later.
Okay.
Given time for mailing
the letter. So that covers that first short period, October 98 to December 98.
Right.
What's covered?
Well, there's two periods that we're dealing with
right.
for 100% temporary partial, and the first one is this period from October 3rd, 98,
right.
when the worker finished the 8 weeks of modified work.
Right.
And then he was trying to obtain continued modified work with the employer.
Right.
But the board decided that he'd recovered completely.
Right, but wasn't the...
So modified work wasn't necessary, according to the board.
Yeah, I'm just looking at page 136 here. And page 136, the last paragraph where the board reverses their decision and recognizes that the worker had a PI. 136, the last paragraph.
Well, I didn't realize we were going to get into it, but there's the medical consultant in October 98 ruled and said I should be in modified work with graduated hours with tolerance limitations. The adjudicator only conveyed to me in a letter in December that I had tolerance limitations, and she had said tolerance limitations are compatible with the XTL position. So then that So that answers, initially in October, it was reviewed.
Right, but
mm-hmm.
I'm just looking at that the PI decision was reversed from what this
mm-hmm.
amendment says.
Because the medical was submitted.
Mr. Taylor, forgive me, but I'm just not clear at all with reference to the first two-month period referred to under issue number three. What you say supports your position that you are not able to do the full job?
Well, before October 2nd, 98, I'd written a letter to the board explaining to them that I'd talked to the employer, and they said as far as they were concerned, I would be fully recovered as of October 2nd. So then I provided...
Because that was the rec, what the rec report had said?
I believe that's what they went with.
6 to 8 weeks of modified work.
Right. They just said, October 2nd, you're done. That's
right.
It.
Right. Okay.
So then I provided them updated medical, the doctor's note, and they said, no, the rec report says October 2nd, that's it.
Saying that you needed to continue with modified duties.
Right.
All those reports.
And that was in... Can't remember exactly.
And so in the meantime,
yeah.
There was...
So they were aware, like they had medical... Yeah, like they had medical in October of 98 stating that I should remain in the modified work program.
So you were ready to cooperate and return to modified duties. But
I was asking.
Yeah, but in the meantime, the board said, no, you don't have permanent impairment and you can go back to regular duties.
Well,
and as a result of that, then later they reversed that decision.
Well, not really, because if not trying to get
so
off.
So for the period that we're, let's
yes.
just deal with this very short period.
That's what I am.
Right.
Because the medical consultant in that period, he said I was supposed to, in memo 50, he says I was supposed to remain in modified graduated hours. But the adjudicator didn't convey that.
It doesn't, like the bottom
yes, so
line is what matters. Like the claims adjudicator said you were recovered. So we're just dealing with
yes.
what happened in terms of adjudication.
Mm-hmm.
We're not saying we agree or disagree.
No.
But that's what happened. So because of that, you were ready to cooperate. You could have done modified duties, and nothing was being offered to you, essentially,
right.
at that point.
That's correct.
Right?
What memo was that again? Memo 17, did you say? Sorry, you just referred to a medical consultant's
memo 50 on page.
Oh, 50, yeah.
I believe it was.
Wait.
No, it can't be 50.
I think we can.
49.
On page 166, memo 50, confirming. I know we're kind of.
Right.
Is this, I'm just trying to answer your questions for you.
Appreciate that. I think if we turn to memo 80. It's a memo dated June 1999, and Figueredo has, I think, put it as to why they used the 50%. And it's page 129, and it's under page 129 under the title Regarding Benefits. If you go to the third paragraph down, I think it gives us a we're talking about why it's only 50% and not something higher, isn't it?
Well, because later...
Is there a word for the reason for the first period?
Regarding benefits.
Third paragraph. As a result, workers entitled benefits beyond October 98, however, only entitled to TP 50%. Is that what we're talking about?
That's right.
October and December? Now, I reached this decision based on the fact that workers partially impaired beyond October 98. I've reviewed the job offered by the employer, and I've concluded they were not within the workers' medical precautions. All right? That's where we are now.
Yeah.
However, worker has not shown me that he made any attempts to find work within his medical precautions. That is why I have allowed TP 50% only. That,
right.
Isn't that it?
Right. See, the problem with this is why we're having confusion right now, is because initially I was told you're fully recovered.
Right.
Then they come back and then they said, no, the job at XTL was suitable.
Right.
Then they come back and said, okay, that's not suitable now. Now we want a job search. And I said, well, I've done one. They didn't say, we want a job search, we want this, we want that. They just said, what did you do? And then what I'll get into is that was submitted of what I did.
Well, we're still just dealing with that first 2 months.
So the 2 month period was an issue.
Yeah, we're only dealing with the first 2 months.
Now they're saying there's no job search.
But you were ready to go back to work. You were just trying to get an offer from your employer or something modified, right? Because you have been participating in modified work up to that point.
Yes.
October 2nd, 1998.
Yes.
Okay.
But there was some concern raised by the adjudicator.
Well, that's I think that's later, though. I think that falls into that next period.
But she was using the standard, what I've read through case files, is the standard did not conduct a self-directed VR program.
Mm-hmm.
That's what she was saying.
And
with
she
that.
Applied it to everything.
Yeah.
But that period between October and December, were you offered any type of other work by Action Force, like going to work at Tim Hortons or anything like that? Were you offered
when they called me December 14th or 15th, it was just before I started working, because there's the phone call I made to say, give me anything, I don't care now. And then they called me the next day at 5 or whatever and said, can you go to work and be there in 15 minutes? No, I can't. And then December 16th, the job offer. So up to that point, no, there was no communication from them to me. It was me to them saying, you know, you have my doctor's medicals. What else do you want for me to do modified work? They just said, there's nothing available for you.
Well, Mr. Taylor, the rationale for the 50% was explained by the adjudicator in memo number 80 and was upheld, in effect, by the ARO.
Mm-hmm.
And the rationale was that while the job you were being offered between August and December was not suitable, you had not tried to get alternative employment that would be suitable. So it seems to me your entitlement to increase the 50% temporary partial fell benefits during that first 2 month period turn on the question of whether you can challenge and persuade this panel to overturn or reject that rationale, i.e. no sufficient evidence of an attempt to find work that was suitable. You've said, I think, that Action Force wasn't offering any suitable work during the period of August to December, October to August to December. And what this adjudicator has said and what the ARO agreed was that absent evidence of some attempt on your part to find safe, suitable, and sustainable work, you were going to be given benefits, but they would only be 50% of what you would otherwise have been entitled to. Question: do you have evidence of an active pursuit of suitable work during those 2 months?
It's in the file, yes.
Are you going
but
to
it's generalized, yes.
Sorry, James. Mr. Taylor, you know what? When you were working, you said you were doing modified work up until October 2nd, 98, as per the RAC recommendation. What modified work did you do with the employer?
I was going to get into that in
more detail. Well, could you get into it now? Just because this is related to the
That was dealing in Pride Pack, and when I was working at Pride Pack, it was working in a cold, damp environment. We were processing. I was dealing specifically when I first started there with peppers. In other descriptions, they mentioned lettuce, they mentioned spinach and everything else. It was dealing with peppers. You lift the case of peppers to the table, you slice them open, and you take the guts out.
I didn't want to get it. I'm going to ask. I need to have a caucus with my colleagues.
Sure.
Was there a problem with doing that job?
Yes.
Did you do it?
Yes.
Did you do it for all the hours that you were assigned to do it? Do the modified work?
Initially, it started off, I was required to do it for 4 hours a day.
No, but did you do the full, return to work program as they had suggested it? Right up until October 7th?
Well, initially it was 4 hours, and it was modified, changed to 2 hours, and then incrementing increased.
Okay, and did you do that all the way through up until you finished?
Yes.
And you followed the return to work program modified?
Yes.
Okay, and were you willing to continue on with that modified
yes.
work?
There was a note in the file from my doctor to my employer
okay.
stating to continue
okay.
to 6 hours a day.
All right. Would you mind? I would
no,
really
no,
just
no.
like to have a short talker.
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor. We'll go off the record.